Okay, so Chai Sarah starts off with Sarah's death. It's very ironic, because the name is called Chai Sarah, the life of Sarah. We find out she dies. So that is the Rebbe should bring up alarm bells or whatever, you know, like this is what's going on with that. It's interesting to note that the parsha talks about Yaakov's death in Egypt, called Vayechi, Vayechi Yaakov. He lived. And that's about Yaakov being alive in the land of Egypt, which is very ironic because basically Yaakov lived his entire life in the land of Israel. He was miserable. He was on the brink of death the whole time, and he didn't have Joseph, his favorite son, and he thought he died, and he thought his life was a failure, and then he comes to Egypt, and he becomes alive. And it's ironic because Paro, who basically at that time was, according to Chazal, with the same power that was at the time when Avram went down to Egypt. So he told Sarah to go to my sister, and Paro took her, and then he gave all these gifts to Avram, he ended up giving Sarah a gift of the land of Goshen, which is where Yaakov ended up going becoming alive, which is really interesting. That's the place where all the Jews went. So that's why they went there, because that was like designated for the Jews. So you see this connection in a sense between Sarah and the land, because the land of Israel was inherited by Avram, given to Avram to God, the first bit of Sarum in the episode with where he, really really mystical episode where you have these animals and he cuts them in half, and very, very strange whole thing. So over there we see that the land of Israel was given to Avram Avinu, and the land that he first land that he got, which represented the whole land, was this burial plot of the Maras and Machpelah, Hebron, which is kind of strange. That the first area that God, that Abraham inherited, that he purchased, that he was able to have a Canaan Israel, inheritance in the land of Israel. Canaan is like a border. He became his own. Became his own place. Land is a burial plot. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Sarah died, it says, because she got a heart attack from finding about a Kesi Yitzchak. Kesi Yitzchak was right before, so Sarah became very agitated and she died because she saw the Sutton, gave her an image of the Akedah. She really freaked out, she died. If you look at the Akedah, we spoke about this, that the Akedah has two messages. Message number one is that you have to live your life like you're dead. So we said that you have to look at your life as if you're dead, which helps you, because you realize that you're dying every day. If you think about it, we're dying every day. We lose time. We lose time one step towards death. I spoke about the website that you put in your information, and it tells you when you're going to die. It's a very depressing website, but at the same time, it puts you like a fire under you. Like, I don't have so much time. That's what death does. Death makes you more alive, which is ironic. But that's what the Akedah taught us. It taught us that you should live your life as if you're dead. And why? There's a lot of reasons for that. One is because you can't rest on your laurels. You can't say, I've accomplished everything I need to accomplish it, because you haven't. We know we haven't. Every minute dies. It means we're losing time. We're losing abilities to accomplish. I mean, we'll never get the time back again. What that it tells you is that every minute is special. Without death, nothing special about us. If we live forever, there'd be no difference between this minute and the next minute, because we have all the time in the world. So it's ironic. The thing that we think that is most meaningless is the most meaningful. That, I think, is the secret of Kohelet. Kohelet tells us that everything's hevel. So we think he's trying to say that get depressed because everything's fleeting. Everything just is transitory. But transitory is the reason why we're alive, the reason why we live. So when God punished Adam HaRishon and said, El Adam, El Adam HaTashuv, if you go to the ground, you go back to the ground, you go get buried, She's trying to tell him that even though it's bad what happened, you get a curse, but this curse is a blessing because this curse enables you to be special, be unique, have a unique place in this world, because you are the only person that lived your life, and without, if it was eternal, you wouldn't have that. The other thing we learned from the Akedah is that Avraham Avinu saw that Minas Adin, strict justice, is not God's only trait. In this world, it feels that way. It feels like this Minas Adin, strict justice, is only God's trait, because this world, in essence, is Minas Adin, strict justice, because the purpose of this world is to create individuals, to create people who are unique. Therefore, this world is very tough, very difficult. That's why it connects to the first point, because death is what makes life difficult. Death is, if you think about it, the reason why we cry, if you think about it, many different reasons why people cry, weddings, people cry, funerals, people cry, a lot of different episodes in life. And I think if you think about a movie that you saw that recently or any time in your life that you cried, it's usually because somebody died or somebody's saying goodbye or someone's, it's an end, it's an ending. It's like a death. Death makes us cry. The reason why death makes us cry is because we realize that we're vulnerable people. We have vulnerabilities, and vulnerability makes you realize that you're not all powerful. You have weakness here. When you're vulnerable, you cry. That's what happens. Vulnerability makes you cry, and the reason why is because vulnerability is the essence of relationship. We spoke about this also about the Gan Eden. Gan Eden. Adam and Eve were arumim. They were naked. It means they were vulnerable. That's what Yosef told the brothers. Meragam, your spies, you came to see the nakedness of the land. It means you kept to see where we're vulnerable, where we have weaknesses. And that is that's really the way we're able to connect to people. And if you think about it, it's also arumim, nakedness is what people do when they have a relationship. They're naked. And why is that? Because what happens when someone has a sexual relationship with someone else means they're making themselves vulnerable to them. That's what you're basically saying. I'm not having my clothes on. I don't have anything protecting me. I'm just that's what makes it so attractive. That's what makes it so devastating when relationships go wrong, is because I made myself vulnerable to you, and you took advantage of me. You were a snake. You were a person who was arum. You're smart. You're cunning. You look to take advantage of my weakness. That's really what that's all about. And that's what Avraham saw. Avraham saw through all that. He saw that the din in this world, which is basically God's way of acting like he's cunning and he's taking advantage of us and wants to hurt us, he realized that's all facade. It's not real. It's not true. And that's what the Akedah, he realized, I don't know why God's doing this to me. I have no idea. But we're not being Christian saying we accept God even though he makes no sense. He's saying, this makes no sense, it's crazy. It's actually one of the Yud Gimel, the 13 ways the Torah is darshan, is learned out. So it's 13 ways. So the last one was what we say, the only one everyone knows, is because that's one we say out loud in davening. It's at the end of, right before Pesukim, December, right before the Baruch Shem Aryeh, that Mizmor Shel Chanukah, which is the beginning of Pesukim Dezimra. Right before that we say the Karbanos. The Karbanos ends with this really strange Tosefta that says that there's 13 ways the Torah is learned out from the oral tradition of how we understand the Torah. One's called the Chayin Shnei Ksuva Machisim Jetzeh Achi Yavol Kosov Shishi V'Rechui B'Neim. Similarly, he says two verses that contradict each other, and we don't know the answer until the third one comes and explains it. So if you look in the art scroll, the prime example it gives is Abraham and the Kedesh Yitzchak. It says that God says to Abraham, "Kibitzchak Yikarel Chazara," that your children are going to come from Isaac. Then he says to him, "Bring your son as an altar, and as a sacrifice to me." So how can those two verses work out? Doesn't make sense. Those two verses don't fit together. So they contradict one another. The way we come out is the third. For Pasuk, which he says, don't hurt Yitzchak. That because I know you're Hashem, you fear God. So that basically answers the question, which is basically he wants to bring him up. He didn't tell him to sacrifice him. So that was the explanation. So Abraham didn't know that, but Basically, we live life. This is our life. Our whole life. Our whole life is basically living life, which we don't understand God. We don't understand what happens in this world. We have questions. We don't get it. But Aram knew you have to look through all that. You have to overcome all that and look through that. And the way you do that is to realize that death is not the end. If you think death is the end, then you got big problems. You're basically putting all your eggs in this basket of this world. And that means you don't really believe that world life has meaning. But if you combine the fact that this is afterlife with the fact of death is it makes it special, then that answers all the questions. Because basically, if you just say this world is everything, that's we see vulnerability is just there to hurt us, and there's no relationship. The only way we can have a relationship with God that makes sense is if you say, "There's a world to come, and this world is a world in which I can make myself special and unique." But the world to come is where I see that God really meant to for my benefit, not to hurt me. It's only because the benefit of this world is that we should become unique individuals that can relate to God, that can have a relationship with others and to God. Without a uniqueness or singularity, we can't have that. Like we said, we can't have choice. We don't have choice. We don't choose. Choosing is the foundation of relationship. So what Sarah taught us is when she looked at life, she was Midas Adin. She was strict justice. So when she looked at life, really, it was really really negative. She laughed. She laughed with cynicism. She was a cynical person. She said, "How can a?" When Avraham Avinu laughed, God didn't mind. Didn't say anything wrong. He said, Avraham said, "Is it possible for a 100-year-old man to have a child?" And he laughed. He said, "This is crazy. This is insane." Page 74, I think. So when Abraham was promised a child, so Vayitzchak, Vayipol Abraham upon him, he fell on his face. Vayitzchak Vayomer, verse 17. So it says, and Abraham threw himself on his face and laughed and thought, "Shall a child be born to a 100-year-old man and shall serve a 90-year-old woman to give birth?" It's crazy. But
it says he laughed out of joy.
That's great. So that's nice of our school to say that. But how do you know?
Yeah, it's true.
You know, it doesn't say. So yeah. If you look in page 80, I mean, how does he know that? I mean, doesn't say anywhere that he left out of joy. I mean, you're putting because you're forced to say that because God doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
But if you see on page 80, is a whole big deal about her laughing. So everyone says it's misogynistic. It says you blame the woman. Sarah 12. Sarah laughed at herself, saying, "After I have withered, shall I again have delicate skin, and my husband is old?" Someone said, "Avram, why does Sarah laugh? Shall I in truth bear a child though I have aged?" Is there anything beyond Hashem? Can when Jewish people want meat, it says Yarashim Titzar, is God's hand short? He says the same thing here. He says he was really mad at the Jews in the desert because they wanted meat, and he's like, Moshe says, "How can I get the meat? I'm just a person. I can't get meat." So God says, "Yarashim Titzar, you think my hand's so short that I can't? I could get them. I'll get a meat. I can do anything." So he says that here. He says, is something too wondrous for Hashem to do, for me to do? I'm insulted. Believe me, you're gonna have a child in a year. So Abraham, so God got mad at Sarah, and then Sarah denied it. She says, "I didn't laugh. Kireya, because I'm a fear of God." But I'm a little. So he says to back there, "Yes, you did. You did laugh." I mean, so he says, "A big deal about it." It's okay. She laughed. "No, you laughed." She says, "She doesn't laugh." Who's lying? Who's lying?
I didn't mean it.
So what does that mean? So if you look at very careful in the pasuk, you see there's a difference. The difference is, she says, "Bekirba lemar," within herself. You know, like people say, like, "I'm laughing inside." You know, like a joke. You know, people. Yeah. Someone says, like. telling a joke and you don't laugh. So he says, I was just I'm laughing inside, like not really, I'm laughing. So she's laughing inside. And she says, so Leah, and I already had, it's about herself, it's personal. I had it. I had my, I stopped getting my period. I have a menopause. So, obviously, my husband is old. So it was a personal thing. I, my husband. When you laugh personally, what you're saying is that you're annoyed. You're saying. This is about you. It's like, I'm going to have a kid. It's ridiculous. That's cynical. Everyone was laughing. In general, he's saying, how is it possible for a 100-year-old man and a 90-year-old woman to have children? That's incredible.
Like in the abstract, a 100-year-old
yeah,
man.
It's right? Exactly, yeah. Abstract. That's what I'm saying. So that's what our school knows. They don't know that, but that's the reason they it's out of joy. Because you're saying, wow, it's incredible. What if it's about me? Then it becomes, huh, I don't have a kid. That's crazy. So Sarah was basically saying, the reason Sarah's mean is that Sarah was strict justice. Avraham was chassid. The whole story here is Avraham was chassid, and everything's he's trying to mix din into his philosophy. So he's like a wild-eyed kid going, "Wow, this is incredible!" Right? He's much more positive. Sarah was very negative. Sarah was like, she's already negative. She already has this cloud over her head, and she when this something like this happens, she laughs cynically. It's a cynical laugh. Those are two types of laughter. Jewish laughter and this Amalek laughter. Amalek laughs at everything. They left. They were called leitzim. They were called folks. What are they called? Punks. They were like, they just laughed at everything. They just were cynical. They were cynical cynics. I just joke that the word for Hebrew, if you translate the word cynical in Hebrew, samach nun kuf lamed, cynical. Not really so perfectly spelled, but. It spells Amalek. Same, 240. So yeah. Amalek. So Amalek is cynical. they're like the extreme cynics. They take it to the nth degree. So when you're cynical, you look at life and say, death is everything. This is the whole world. The whole world is terrible. And this is everything. There's no world to come. What Avraham saw at the Arkada was that he knew God was chesed, but he didn't understand what's happening. These two verses contradict one another. This whole world is a contradiction. This whole Midas Adin means your is contradiction, because Midas Adin gets the best out of you. The way it gets the best out of you is contradict you. Basically, gives you difficulty. Gives you something to fight against, and that enables you to become yourself. But we look at it and say, why is God doing this to me? Why is this life so hard, so difficult? So because we have to remember that there's a world to come. But remember, there's something beyond. This world is not everything. This world is just here to help us gain independence and individuality, so that we could choose God's relationship with God. Otherwise, this world has no meaning. If you look at it, like, basically, the death of Sarah teaches us about life. Death makes us alive because it reminds us that we die, and we have to take advantage of every minute. Also reminds us that this can't be everything. This is just here. This world's going to die because there's eternal life beyond this world, and that's why we get the land of Israel through burial. That's why the life, when someone dies, think about it. A lot of people think of them as jerks. Then when they die, all of a sudden everyone gives this eulogy how great they were. That's the way it works. Why is that? Because when you look at someone's life and from a distance, like Abraham looked at the situation he was in, then you're able to be positive. You're able to say, he was a jerk, but he accomplished a lot in his life. He became an individual. That's what death does. Death brings out the your individuality. It brings out the best of you. You look from a 50,000 foot view. If you look at someone, analyze every detail and make it personal, then you hate the person. But look at the person from far away. You say, okay, he was a good guy. Like it's a song from a distance. You know, a song from a distance.
No.
It's a beautiful song, Bette Midler.
You want to sing it?
I don't sing. I play.
No, I'll listen to it more.
It's a really beautiful
What's
song.
What's it called?
From a distance, I think so. From a distance.
Cue it up.
Basically, what she's saying is that from a distance, look at the world from a distance. Then there's no war. There's no fighting. There's no pettiness. So we should look at the world from 50,000 foot view, so to speak. We say if you start analyzing things to death, then you look for, you can't miss the forest for the trees. That's Minnesota focuses you on detail. That's Minnesota strict justice is like there's no feeling. It's a snake. The snake represents robots and computers, because snake in the Garden of Eden, basically what it was supposed to do was supposed to be our helper, supposed to do stuff for us. It's an amazing thing. Because if you think of a snake, is like totally robotic. It basically, if a pet snake for 20 years, it'll eat you. It doesn't care. That's its natural composition. But the snake represents the kind of a person that is cunning, that is devious and sneaky. The word sneaky and snake are the same. Is he looking to take advantage of vulnerability? That's what robots are. Robots are incredibly. They try to make AI. I think it's impossible to make AI because. True AI, because robots can't be people. They can't. It's impossible. You need the relationship between man and woman to have that idea. Because in the Garden of Eden, God blew this nishmas ruach, this ruach into us, this soul into us. Robots don't have a soul, so they can't really connect. They can't relate to people, relate to anybody. But they are very, very efficient. They're amazingly efficient. Let's talk about Germany. Germany has a snake-like male, it's also male-oriented. Most of the violence in this world is caused by men. What the curse against women was saying that women are subordinate to men. Who Shabbat, he's going to rule over you. That means the feminine side of life, feminine side of the world basically is suppressed. And that causes this world to be very harsh and cruel. Because the male side of things, that's why it says, Timcha Zecher Amalek, destroy the memory of Amalek. So, King Saul thought that said he was taught that it means destroy the males. Zachar, 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 and Zechar, same word. And it's in Torah, it's not there's no vowel, so you know. So he learned that Zachar kill the males, so he only killed the men. So why is that? Why would he think that? Well, you shouldn't kill everybody. I mean, all the Amalek's evil. So the reason is because he. Look, the Amalek is saying they're male oriented. It means says vayzenevlecha. Says it's like they took advantage of you. He's vayzenevlecha. Here, let me translate it in our scroll. He struck those of you who are highmost. Yeah, he struck. That means he attacked all those who were hindmost. Nechashalom. That doesn't really mean that. Nechashalom means who are weak. Chalash. Chashal. So nechashal, those who are left behind. This is hindmost, but those who left behind. This is talking about Shevet Dan. It says Shevet Dan were idol worshippers and they were left behind. They were kicked out of the clouds of glory and the Amalekites were able to take advantage of those who were weak. That's the whole thing. They were weak. Nechashalim is nechalash. It's the words, the letters are switched, but the same root. Is weak. Those who are weak, God, they took advantage of the weak, the same exact idea. But the word that's used for taking advantage of them, because the word is zanav. Zanav means a tail. So.
Like a snake tail?
Like a snake tail. And also, what's the part of a person's body that's like a snake, like a tail? Exactly. So that's zacha, the maleness. They basically looked at life from a male perspective, basically, might makes right, survival of the fittest, take advantage of every
the victors go to the spoils. Victors,
exactly. So that's power. Power. That's who in Shabbat, he's going to rule over you. Means man's going to rule over woman. That's going to be the guiding principle of the world. It's basically, whoever could take the most advantage of this world, of the weakness, other people are weak, and you just take advantage of it. Feminine side of life looks at life and says. life is about relationship. Life is about being a mammal, being caring about other people, and looking at life from an emotional perspective. And doesn't mean you have to be weak. It just means you can't look at life as a place where you just take advantage of weakness. Big difference. So this is the essential difference between man and woman. That's why Avraham Avinu really didn't appreciate his wife until she died. That's really sad, but that's exactly what the story is about. He his whole life, he basically took advantage of Sarah. He said, Sarah is telling me I'm my sister so I can get rich. He forgot about Sarah when God promised him a child. He says, I already have Yishmael, what do I need a child for? So he says, God says, you have a wife, Sarah. Remember her? And then he continues this behavior towards Sarah. He basically, he listened to Sarah to throw out Yishmael, and that ironic, because that really hurt us. That's what Yishmael was the thorn in our side. But Sarah saw that, and she tried to react to it. But what ended up happening was that because of Yishmael got his bris milah at 13, so he basically ruled over the later authorities say that he ruled Israel for 1,300 years for that. From the year 600 until 1900. So that's an amazing thing. Basically, they're a thorn on our side. Yishmael, the Arabs are a thorn on our side.
From 700 till
now.
Till now.
Yeah. So Nachmani says, Ravan says that this whole episode of throwing Yishmael out of the house was the reason, was justified them being mad at us. Basically, it's them trying to kill us and destroy us. But the problem was that Sarah was Minas Adin. Yishmael was Minas Chesed. So Chesed basically has no boundaries. What Sarah brought to the table was she brought the Minas Adin, the strict justice, which we look at this world and say it's meaningless, and we're cynical and all the cynicism. But it's basically, it depends how you treat with someone who dies. So Sarah died, burying her in the land of Israel, basically said this is our land. We have deep roots in Israel, and that was through Sarah. Yishmael doesn't have roots. So Yishmael is very all over the place. It's hevel, basically steam. It's basically chesed. It's just all over the place. There's no boundary, but when you get buried, you have a boundary. You say, this is my plot, this is who I am, this is me. This is my uniqueness. And using Din for that purpose, Sarah, during her life, didn't really have that. But when she died, everything came together. That's why Chesed Shel Emes, true Chesed, is done after a person dies. The true Chesed Shel Emes, Chesed of truth, is only when you do Chesed with a dead person. Because basically, they can't pay you back. And that's the whole problem with Chesed. The whole problem with Chesed is that you everything's you're getting coddled, you're getting freebies, but here you're not getting freebie. Basically, there's no you're doing this chesed without expecting anything in return. That means that you're doing the chesed because you really believe in eternity. You believe that you realize that this world is not everything, and there is a world beyond. And that's why we inherited the land of Israel through burial. And that's why Rivka's name is if you switch around the letters, her name is spelled Kfur, so it's burial. Rivka. Kfur is Kuf Beis Resh Hei. Rivka is Resh Beis Kuf Hei. So it's the same exact letters, burial. And when Yitzchak met Sarah, Rivka, he said he brought it into his mother's tent. And then he loved her. And the Chazal said that all the things that Sarah did came back to life.
With the challah, the light.
Exactly.
Candles.
So you see that Sarah ended up becoming, Rivka ended up becoming Sarah. She basically, Yitzchak not only did everything, remember the last time we said Yitzchak did everything his father did? He married his wife, he married his mother.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing thing, because the whole difference between the forefathers that ended up on the right side of things, Yitzchak as opposed to Ishmael, Yaakov as opposed to Esau, they had a relationship with their mother. It's a feminine thing. You realize that the men, even the Minas Adin men, Yitzchak was Minas Adin. He married his mother. Basically, realized that it's a little creepy, but basically, what we're saying is that you have, your relationship with your mother is basically determined whether you're Jewish or not, and that's what it comes down to. Because Esav, that's why Judaism comes through the mother. Esav, basically, was born from a Jewish mother, but he hated his mother. And he only liked his father, and his only fellow was with his father. And that's what cut him out of the Jewish people. Basically, he's a Yisrael Mumer. He's a Jew, but he's a apostate. So we say that even though he's Jewish, because he's two Jewish parents, and that's why Yitzchak said, how can he be cut out? It doesn't make sense. It's not like Ishmael. Ishmael didn't have a Jewish mother. He had a Jewish mother. Esav cut himself out by cutting himself out from his mother, from his relationship with his mother. And that's what made Yaakov chosen over him. So Yaakov had a relationship with his mother. He let his mother help him see things the way a woman sees things. So this week's parsha is basically setting us up for that, showing us that Sarah was a person who taught us that feminine side of life, even if you're Midas Adin, but you could, the whole point was you turn Midas Adin into a realization that what Avraham Avinu received at the Akedah, that this world is a world that is transient, which means we get uniqueness through that, and that's what death provides us, even though it's sad, and it makes us realize that this world is not everything, this world to come, there's something beyond this world. And without that philosophy, you become a real cynic and a real your life is completely negative. So the way to make a life positive is to realize that death is not something that's the end. There's something beyond death, and that's what the land of Israel ends up teaching us also. Because the land of Israel would die. It's going to die. It's going to basically have no vegetation until we come back, and that's going to be the sign that Mashiach is coming. That's the sign that the end of all our exile is near. Is near. That the land of Israel is that sign that tells us that even though everyone wants to be buried there, the whole reason why everyone wants to be buried there, because that's telling us that there's something beyond this world, something beyond this exile that we're in. Everything's negative now, but it's going to get better. And that belief is what pulls us through the difficult times. So the land of Israel is what binds us all together while we're in exile, ironically. So when we get the land of Israel, we get it through Sarah. We're in exile. Get it through Sarah. Get it through the mothers. Rivka, Rivaka, Alama. Rivka, Mavaka. So, Abanah, she cries. Rachel cries over her children. Our mother Rachel, she was the only one not buried in the cave of Machpelah. So what she did was she provided us hope in the exile. So basically, the mothers that are buried in Israel, they provide us with the idea that death is not the end of everything, that the land of Israel is the land that we get buried in, and it's a land that's going to provide us with hope when we're in the exile. And Rachel, our mother, so our mothers are the ones that taught us that. Sarah taught us that. And Rivka, who is Sarah, embodied Sarah, and her name was Beriel, embodied that. Rachel was the one who, and Leah obviously was the one who got buried with Yaakov, even though she wasn't his main wife, and her life was miserable because she was crying all the time, and says that's why she was Inela Rachel, so her eyes were soft because she cried all the time. She was very negative and very, very sad, but she ended up being with Yaakov in the real sense, in the eternal sense, in Maris and Machpelah. Because of her suffering, she got eternity with Yaakov, and Rachel was a sad one. Rachel cried over her children who were in exile because she realized that was her job, that was her purpose in life. She was Hevel Yofi. Hevel Yofi means Yofi is beauty is fleeting, but fleeting is ironically what we need. Yes, it's true. Beauty is not something to put your stake in, because you don't live forever. You die, and that tells you that you get old. We get old, and beauty is not forever. But beauty still gives us hope. Beauty makes us realize that there's something hopeful in this world, something to look forward to. And that's what Rachel did for us in exile. She said, she cried over us, because crying, like we said, is a result of transience, a result of death. She used death. It's just like Sarah did, but just in a different way. She used death to give us hope. And there's better times for us in the future. Basically, what Sarah, all mothers taught us, and this high Sarah, the life of Sarah, Sarah's the hallmark of a woman. She's the source of all motherhood in Judaism. We say if someone's a convert, they say Ben Sarah. You know, we daven for them. She's the foremother of Sara, means she's the queen of Jews. She's basically the queen of everything. That her life taught us after death that there's always hope for us, and that's what the feminine view of life teaches us, and that's what I think Chai Sara is about. Make sense?
Yeah, interesting, really interesting.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. It's amazing stuff. Torah is amazing.
So this idea of acquiring through death.
Yeah.
Is this related to like Cain and Abel, like Havel? And
yes, Havel. That's Havel. Havel. Same Havel.
And like Cain, doesn't that mean to acquire?
Yes, exactly right. It's an amazing thing. Kicha, Mistayefon. The way we learn marriage in the Torah, in the Gemara learns marriage through this episode. The Gemara says, how do you know that the Torah once says, Vayikach, you should take a wife for yourself? How do you know that's marriage? So it says, how do you know you could get married through a kinyan? Kinyan is kind, a acquisition. So it says, Kicha may stay from, because since when Abraham bought the burial plot for Sarah, it says, Vayikach, it says, not Vayikach, it says, this is a word to take. So it says, Kach mimeni. So let's say this is Vika. So basically, he says, take it from me. I think that's it. Kachimini. Take money. So, kicha, so the word, and it says, Vayikach, when it says marriage law, in Parshas Ki Tzetzeh, so it says, Vayikach, that he took a wife. So since they both say the language of taking, so when it says, the way we know that you could, when you get married, it's an acquisition. It's like a financial acquisition. Is from this parsha, from the parsha that Abram bought the land. Since he bought the land, he took the land through with money. So that's what happens. When you marry, you give him a ring because you're saying you're buying the woman. Now that seems crazy. I mean, it's all the feminist groups say. You see, it says you have a kinyan, an acquisition. It says, how do you acquire an animal? How you Maseches Kedushin. The Mishnah says, Isha Nikbeis. The woman is acquired three ways. And the next Mishnah says, an animal is acquired three ways. So it's that sounds really bad. And a lot of men look at that and they say, yeah, and it's true. You basically buy a woman, buy a buyer. But what it's trying, the Mishnah is saying something very subtle, saying an amazing thing, and saying, you have to be really honest about it. You have to be very subtle, because it's really important. But basically the difference is that, yes, it's buying things, but there's two different kinds of buying. One type of buying is you own it. The other type of buying is it's your own. And there's a very big difference. You're buying something that you own, it means you're controlling it. That's the Huyim Shabbach, that's the philosophy of Amalek, saying that I own things that I buy. There's another thing where Yaakov, who is the antithesis of this, because of the fact he had a relationship with his mother, he looked at acquisition as something that is very precious to him. And that's why he, when he went back to get the Pachim Tanu, he got these little trinkets, that he ended up putting himself in danger and getting in the fight with the angel and acquiring his name. He got his name Yisrael, Israel, which is the land of Israel. Same idea. It says that he went back for pacham ketanim, went back for little trinkets.
This was right before he reconnected with his brother?
Yeah.
Were the trinkets the little gifts that he was giving, or was that something else?
No, the little trinkets were, he basically acquired that during his, I'm trying to remember what it was. It's the source of Chanukah. Chanukah is Pach Shemen. Pach Shemen is a little container of oil, and the word comes from Pachim Ketanim. Pachim Ketanim, I don't remember what it says there. But it's basically he acquired this, it was very special, these little trinkets were very special to him. And he went back in the middle of the night to get them, it says. And that's when he met that angel. He was on his way to meet Esav. He met the angel of Esav, and he fought him the whole night, wrestled with him the whole night. And then that's where he got his name. He wouldn't let the angel go. So he says, he asks the angel his name. So the angel asks him his name. He says, what's your name? So he says, my name is Yaakov. He says, no, your name's no longer Yaakov. Your name is Yisrael. He says, you fought with God and you were successful. And then Yaakov asks his name and he says, Lama Zatishal, why do you ask my name? And then he let him go. And Rashi says that the angel needed to go because he needed to sing to God. And Yaakov wouldn't let him go. Yaakov had him in a headlock. He wouldn't let him go. So he gave him blessing of his name. So it's a very strange episode. But what happened over there is Yaakov went back for the Pachim Ketanim, and it says he put himself in danger for them. So the Gemara says, from here you see that Tzaddikim, look at their money, is more important than their bodies. Because he put himself in danger.
Tzaddikim do.
Yeah, Tzaddikim do. Which is an incredible thing. What do you mean? They care about money? About money? So the answer is that there's a difference between a tzaddik looks at money and a rasha looks at money. A rasha looks at money as something you use to get stuff.
Okay.
Something you, it's a transaction. That's how you look at marriage. Look at marriage as a transaction. Basically, I buy this woman, I buy her. But there's another aspect of money which is completely different. Money in Hebrew is damim. In Aramaic is damim. Damim means blood. So the word for money and blood are the same. Blood, but dam is blood. Damim is blood. Dam is money. Damim is money. So why is blood and money the same? So you could think of very good reasons why. Blood is, people spill blood over money. But blood and money are very connected. That's if you look at it from a Moloch's perspective. But dam, now there's another way to look at it. Blood and money are also held in banks. Why is that? Because
something precious about them.
It's part of a system. Yeah. Basically, money is worth nothing. It's a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Dom is worth nothing. It's just, what is blood worth in a container? Nothing. It's basically plasma. It's like chemicals. It's not nothing. It only works if it is a system that it functions within. So the reason a dollar means something is because it's within financial system. It represents the United States of America, is behind it. Everyone's complaining now because dollar is being printed like there's no tomorrow. So the value is just not going to last because they're treating it like a piece of paper. That's all they're doing. Eventually, the only reason that this dollar is worth anything is because it's backed by the U.S. government, which is supposedly the most powerful government in the world. But when that stops happening, it's going to be like Germany again, where the wheelbarrow, the currency, it's worthless. So it's only worth something. Inherently, it's worth nothing. It's only worth something within a system. Blood is the same thing. Blood inherently is worth nothing. But it's invaluable in a system. It becomes once it's in a system of the human body, it becomes priceless. Because if you don't have that, then you're missing the lifeblood, so to speak, of yourself. So that's what Yaakov looked at his money. He looked at his money. It's more important than my body because myself. Because this is what when you earn money, you're basically saying it's like Midas Hadin to the good side of Midas Hadin, which is if you look at Midas Hadin cynically, then you look at dollars cynically, say that's worth nothing. It's worthless. It's really it's you're cynical about it. You say basically it's what I could get out of now because I better spend my money now because I got to take advantage of the situation I'm in. But I have money, I might as well use it, spend it. But Tzaddik says this is I put my life and my heart and soul into this money. This money is not It's like a dollar you put on your wall when the first dollar you make in your business. Spend it. No, this is precious. This is something. So I put my life, my blood, sweat, and tears into this. This is money within my system of my life. It's my blood. It's who I am. So the difference between owning something, a kinyan could be owning, but kinei lecha chaver, buy yourself a friend. What do you mean buy a friend? You pay a guy off to be a friend? I mean, it's saying no. You acquire a friend. You put your heart and soul to something. Then you really acquire it. It becomes yours. It becomes something special to you because this is meant for you. That's what buying a wife means. It means this person, I'm investing. It's an investment. That's what means kinei. You invest in this person. You invest your whole life in this person. This is you're putting all your stake in this. You're putting all your cards. You're betting all your chips on this person. That's what kinei lecha means. It means you're putting all your chips on this one number, this one person. And whatever happens, you know, if it doesn't work out, then that's it. Your life is over. And that's it. You're totally jumping in the pool, the deep end of the pool. That's it. I'm done. I'm invested. That's what it means. It's not enough to just love someone. You have to really invest in the person to the point where you're putting all your chips in this person's corner, and that's it. And whatever happens. You don't know when you get married. You have no idea what's going to happen in your life. You think you do, but you have no idea. You think the person is going to be a good person. As I said, we said emunah, belief is like marriage. You believe in God, but you don't really know if there's a world to come. You don't know, but you're putting your chips in that shoulder because you did the research. You this person you felt is going to be a good person. You have evidence, and you're saying this is meant to be. Because if it wasn't meant to be, then I wouldn't be this person now. There's a reason why things have in my life. The reason why I'm with this person now. The reason why this person is for me. And I have evidence. I have reasons why I'm looking towards this person as someone who's my soulmate. Once you have it all down, then you have to say, I'm choosing this person. So that's what kinyan really means. Kinyan means, that's Cain's mistake was, he looked at kinyan as control. And that's why he killed him, because he basically said, control, killing, murder is the ultimate control. And that's what jealousy is. And jealousy is control. Jealousy, kinyan, the word kanai, jealous person, is the same as kinyan. Kanai is a zealot. So there's two types of zealots. One type of zealot tries to control. That's what religious zealots are. Zealots basically say, I know what God wants, and you should do what God wants. So I'm going to exhibit my control over you, and it would be crazy so that I can control you to do what I think God wants you to do. That's a zealot, religious zealot. But people look at Pinchas as a zealot because he killed those two, the Zimri and the prince of Israel. And the princess of Midian, and said, Moab, I mean, said, they're fornicating in public, we got to kill them. We have to have a rally against gays. You know, that's what we have to do. Tell everyone in the world who's not doing what we think God wants them to do that they're wrong. But the problem is that's not what Pinchas was. Pinchas did a one-time thing in his whole life that he spontaneously did without thinking about it. He didn't plan to be a zealot. He basically put all his chips into this moment and said, I can't stand by and watch this happen. I have to do something about it. And I'm going to risk my whole life on this one action. That's the difference between a kanai who plans in advance and tries to be the person who controls, and a person who's spontaneous and basically responds to something that he personally can't stand, because he can't sit by and let this happen, because this will violate everything that he believes in. And sometimes people are wrong. Sometimes they're wrong, but it doesn't matter. You this is who you are. This is who defines you. So there's a difference between kanoi, who's a zealot, and a kanoi who's jealous because of a relationship. He's protecting the relationship. He's saying, this is not because I think this person's wrong and I want to make them right. It's because this is my relationship. This is my relationship with God. This is my relationship with life. This is who I am. I can't stand by and watch this happen. I can't do it. This is who I am. Not because I'm trying to impose my belief. It's because I'm responding based on my relationship, looking at life as a relationship, looking at life as something I care about, something that matters to me, means something to me. I can't just stand by. I have to do something about it. Now the person could be misguided, and but this is what it's about, my relationship with life. It's about my caring about who I am as a person, my self-expression. That's the difference in a kanoi, cannot be acquiring something out of manipulation and planning and plotting, and acquiring something that is truly yours, truly something you care about, and it's your essence. And that's what difference between buying something and relating to something on that level. And that's why God's always jealous. God's always jealous of us. He's not because he's trying to control us. We look at it that way. God saying, you're not doing my will, I kill you. But God's another way to look at it. God is looking at us and saying, I love you. I can't stand by and watch this happen and let you go astray. So that's what exile ends up teaching us. The exile is telling us that God is like we say, if you don't make Kiddush, then the non-Jews make Havdalah. It means that that's a joke. They say if you don't sanctify God's name and say, God, we love you, then the non-Jews end up killing us because saying that we're not going to be, God's not going to let us intermarry to the point where we're assimilated to the point where we're dead. God will keep us alive. And the way he keeps us alive is either through us sanctifying ourselves and saying we're special, we're unique. If you don't do that, then basically the exile is gonna spit us out and say you're separate anyway, you're different anyway.
Yeah.
So that's basically the two sides of Kenyan, of Cain, and this whole thing of purchasing an animal versus a wife. That's the difference. It's basically are you the type of person that looks at marriage as like an animal? The type of person that realizes that the kinning over relationship is in other words, does the animal teach us about marriage, or does marriage teach us how to relate to an animal? Because animals are another thing also. Animals, if we look at animals as something we control, we have no problem torturing them and using them for meat and food and Jews do. Religious Jews have no problem. I mean, to me, it's like sickening. That's why I became vegan, and one of the reasons I became vegan. My wife actually taught this to me because I didn't think about this at all. I'm still learning about it, but people are just in denial when it comes to these things, and it's really troubling. It's just basically, how can you basically what it is, you just ignore it, you just don't look at it. But if you looked at the meat industry, I can't understand how kosher industry just ignores it. They just, I mean, it's appalling, and the reason is because we look at our money and our acquisitions as just something we own or could do anything we could just control.
And so far away from modern society.
Yes.
There's no butcher. Don't even see a butcher anymore, right? It's just cellophaned and it's sitting there.
That's right. It's like you're buying a piece of fruit.
Yeah.
But the thing about fruit is the same thing. Fruit is the same problem because fruit is basically, we think it just grows in the supermarket. Fruit is something that people put their heart and soul into, the farmers, the heart and soul, and the way it's done today, factory farming, destroys the farmer, destroys the relationship human beings have with the earth. And the same, it's got all comes full circles. The earth is where we get buried. The same, Chayesar is about this. And basically, our relationship with the earth has to be something that we care about, we manage to us. The rain, the whole concept of rain, is that we have to pray for it. We can't just, it's a relationship. That's why we explained last time that Esav said, how do I give miser, tithe my salt or my straw? Because salt and straw doesn't mean anything to me. It's just Asa's whole relationship with money was the same as his relationship with women. He basically said, he killed men and raped their wives because he's like, relationship doesn't mean anything. All that matters is who's stronger, and I'm stronger than everybody else, so I'm going to kill this guy and rape his wife because control is all that matters. And that's the male perspective of the world. Female perspective of the world says, feminine perspective of the world of life is basically saying, My money is my relationship. It's the same thing. I care about my money more than myself because money is what I earned. Myself is what's given to me. My body is given to me. So when you look in the mirror, that's not you. That's what God gave you. What you are is what you produce because it comes from your heart and your soul. That's the dollar you put on the wall because that's you look at your money, you say, That's more than me, because me is just giving. My body is something that I didn't do anything to create. I might work out and make it better, but it's not who I am. Who I am is what I produce, what I become as a person. Those are based on my choices. That's a feminine view of the world. It's a very different point of perspective. Masculine says, what I earn is what I use to get what I want and control. And that's what Esau's philosophy was. And that's why Yaakov says to God, I'm going to tithe because you are going to give me all this stuff. And that's why Abraham says, I'm going to serve you because you're going to give me all this stuff. Because the stuff that I get from you is stuff that is a relationship. You give me, I give you, I return the love in return. I'm gonna say I'm gonna give you 10% of what you give me.
Is this why they say you can't? The only thing you can challenge Hashem on is charity. I heard this.
Yes, David HaMelech said he challenged God.
Things I think you can challenge God.
Yeah.
On.
So challenging God. I don't know. I have to look at that exactly how it's worded. I have to think about that. Why is challenging God? I'm not sure. It's worded that way. I'm not sure that's
maybe it's not challenging, but maybe it's like, yeah, it's probably different.
Not sure. I have to think about it. I have to look that up and see what the source says exactly. That's a good question.
Or test, maybe? I don't know if it's test.
So there are times where David HaMelech, and others asked God to test him, like Yitzchak asked God to test him, and God punished them for it, or said, okay, I'm going to test you, and then they failed the test. So it's not so simple. The Gemara says that you could challenge God. Why does it say, as the Lashon says, challenge God, that's the reason. I have to look that up. That's a good question. I have to look that up. So anyway, yeah. So that's everything comes full circle. It's basically it's about that's why this parsha brings all these kinds of Kenyan acquiring, marriage, burial, Israel, exile. All comes together.
Wow.
So that's Chayesar.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.